You need to be successful. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 192.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome to a brand new episode of The Art of Bombing. Dan Bublitz Jr. here with you today on Tuesday, March 2nd, 2021. Hope everybody had a great week. We have a great episode today. I had a great conversation with my friend and San Diego-based comedian Neil Singh. He came in second at the 2020 San Diego Comedy Festival. And shortly thereafter, we had a conversation about comedy and a lot of other stuff. And that's what's coming up on the podcast today. But before we get to that, we got to handle the business, as they say in the industry. The business. Got to handle the business. And the first thing I want to talk to you all about is the new Patreon reboot. And I say reboot, I use that term very loosely. It's not really a reboot as much as it is. I'm just going to start putting more attention and focus on the Patreon. I haven't really been doing anything with it. And a lot of that's because I haven't really had any patrons on there. But a lot of it's just I've been lazy and I haven't really done anything with it. And now I'm going to. So I'm going to be starting to put bonus content out there. And not just bonus content related to The Art of Bombing, but bonus content related to my comedy. Give you an example. Today, I put on a previously unpublished comedy album that I recorded like 5 years ago in my hometown, and my algebra teacher came, and she was tanked, and she heckled the whole show, and I ended up not releasing it. But now it's released on the Art of Bombing Patreon. The album's called Hey Teacher, Shut the F Up, and it's a fun time. So, you know, if you have the financial means to join our Patreon, please do. At $5, that gets you access to a lot of stuff. There's only two tiers. It's pretty simple. You can either join the Bomb Squad Pro or the Bomb Squad Elite. One's $5, the other's $10, but I'm going to start doing more content, more bonus content on there. And once I reach 10 patrons on there, I'm going to release another previously unreleased comedy album on the Art of Bombing page. So, fun stuff on there to check out if you have the financial means. If you don't, that's cool. I totally understand. The best way you can really support the show is if you leave a 5-star rating, maybe leave a review, share our content, and make sure you've subscribed to the podcast. And speaking of podcasts, have you guys heard about the Zach Lyman podcast? Check out the Zach Lyman podcast. Comedian Zach Lyman sits down with creative guests to have a fun and laid-back conversation, seeking to walk away with new knowledge of what they create and why they do. This is a lighthearted show that is made with a passion for comedy, podcasting, and all kinds of art. Zach Lyman Podcast has guests you know and love, from writers for Conan O'Brien to comedians with their own Netflix specials, including me. I've been a guest on the Zach Lyman Podcast. The Zach Lyman Podcast was recently mentioned in Vulture Magazine as a podcast they're listening to. Don't miss an episode of Zach Lyman Podcast. Subscribe anywhere you find your podcast or visit ZachLymanPodcast.com. All right, the next thing I want to talk to everybody about is I want to talk to you all about the March Bombness competition that I was trying to do. Unfortunately, I did not get enough entries, so I've decided to cancel it. I honestly only had 2 submissions, and that's just not enough to do the contest. But I did get a pretty good submission, and I may or may not read it on the podcast in the near future. But right now, I did release it in the newsletter, in the monthly newsletter for March. So if you're a subscriber to the newsletter, you get to see that story up front. If you're not, you should probably subscribe to the newsletter, and you can do that at artofbombingpod.com. You can sign up for the monthly newsletter. I send out that, like I said, it's once a month, and all kinds of different stuff. It changes from month to month, depends on what's going on. But that's one thing I included in the March newsletter, was that submission. So check that out. Now, if you do have a bombing story that's really that you want to tell, that would be fun. As long as it's under less than 3 minutes, you can call into the Bomb Squad hotline at 651-212-5376, and you can tell me about it. You can tell the story yourself, and I may play it on an episode of the podcast. So that's an option. Be a fun little thing to do. So check that out. Oh, man, this last Saturday, I got to do some live comedy. I was at the St. Francis American Legion in St. Francis, Minnesota. It felt good to be back on stage. It was a socially distanced show with, you know, safety precautions and all that jazz. At least I was taking safety precautions, and it was fun. I did over 50 minutes, and I was a headliner. And, yeah, it felt good to be back on stage. I was a little rusty, but for the most part, everything came back overall. And you know what, I wasn't sure how it was going to be because I hadn't performed that long since like October, but it went really well overall, and I'm very satisfied with my set, and everybody seemed to have a good time, and it was good to be back in live comedy. But virtual comedy hasn't went away. I've got a virtual show coming up. If you're listening to this on Tuesday, I've got a virtually clean comedy showcase that I'll be hosting on Zoom. You can find out more information about that show at blitzedentertainment.com. Also got the new clean open mic, the Munch Mic, that I host on the first and third Sundays of every month. That next one will be coming up too. The next open mic. So if you're a comedian and you want to work on your clean comedy, you can check out the Munch Mic on blitzedentertainment.com to find out how you can sign up for the next mic and get a spot. Last thing I'm going to talk about before we get into this conversation with Neil is about this. If you live in the Twin Cities area, you should go check out Sergeant's Time. It is a comedy-based benefit show that's produced by Combat Creations, a veteran-owned production media company out of Minnesota. That's going to be March 21st at 7 p.m. at the House of Comedy in the Mall of America. The show's going to feature Terry Blues, William Spotted Bear, Mitch Biro, and it's hosted by Jonah Maddox. They're all military vets, and it is a fundraiser. You can go get tickets at moa.houseofcomedy.net. Check that out. If you're in the Twin Cities area, I highly suggest going to see that. William Spotted Bear is actually a really good friend of mine. He's been on the podcast, a previous episode of the podcast, and he doesn't live in the cities anymore, so he's coming back to the cities to do this show, so that'll be cool. So if you're in the area and you want to go see a great show and support a great cause, go check out Sergeant's Time Comedy Show at the House of Comedy in the Mall of America, March 21st at 7 p.m. Again, tickets are available at moa.houseofcomedy.net. All right, here's my conversation with Neil. Enjoy.
And now, it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
I'm Indian, 7-Eleven, not casino. I know that's good. I always want to be in the same place. I was born and raised in the Indian province of Silicon Valley. That's cool, you guys heard of it. Small world, man. Both my parents, they're Indian immigrant doctors, very hardworking people, which means they are very disappointed. I was telling my dad about this show tonight. I was like, Dad, I would be at the Comedy Palace in front of a packed house. You know, what do you think about that? He's like, how much money are you going to make? And I told him, and he was like, what does your future? I was like, Dad, come on, man. I've been doing comedy for a while, and then eventually, you're gonna die. I'm your only kid. The hell did you forget? You know? I'm getting everything. You know? The boy's gonna be okay, Dad. I feel bad about not making that joke, right? Because it makes it sound like I'm waiting around for my parents to be back so I can enjoy all their stuff, which honestly, that couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, I live in their fucking house. I enjoy that shit all the time. Boy, I see it, whatever's theirs is mine. Whatever's mine, well, they bought it, so it's theirs.
You got second place at the San Diego Comedy Festival. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that is correct. Yeah. I know everybody's supposed to say this, but I did not expect to do that well. it was the first festival I'd ever been in. And honestly, I kind of forgot about it. I kind of entered just for, you know, the networking and stuff and just to do it. And it's close enough to home, but then, you know, it's changed into an online fest. I think it was supposed to be back in May.
Mm-hmm. It was.
Or something. And they kept getting pushed back, so they wanted to get it done in 2020. So they just went ahead and did an online one. And I think my first two rounds, I got the first place. You know, so I had some confidence going into the last thing. But then, you know, I mean, and then the final round, like, those are seven solid comedians, some of them with, like, 20 years in the game kind of thing. And so, you know, I mean, honestly, it was, yeah, just an honor to be there. And at the end, you know, I didn't get it. But, you know, I feel pretty good. I mean, I feel pretty good about a second place finish. It's probably for the best, honestly, like, you know, because my plan the whole time is if I did win, I did the whole festival with no underwear on the whole time. I just had like a shirt on. And my plan was if I won to get up and just flash the shit out of everybody. It's payback to the pal. No, I kid.
It's payback. Well, that's cool because then you also won a nice little prize to go with that. So that's cool. You can't beat that.
Yeah, man. I mean, yeah.
That's awesome. That's
and I think, I believe you were the one that put the thing together originally, right? The San Diego.
Yeah, comedy. Brandon Young and I, and then along with Tony and George, the Comedy Palace, are the ones that. You know, they've always kind of owned it, and then we just kind of ran it for them.
Yeah.
Whatever. But yeah, yep. But it's good to see that it's still going. I kind of wondered, you know, when I stepped away, what would happen. Just because, you know, because Brandon had already stepped away. He stepped away after like the second or third year, and then I kept at it for, you know, a couple years. I ended up running that festival for 5 years, and then I stepped away.
Yeah, right here. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, it's as much fun as you can.
Oh, absolutely. Like,
you know, obviously, it's not ideal, but you know.
Yeah, for virtual comedy or whatever, like our virtual shows, and happen to go that way, I felt like they did a pretty decent job with the festival because I watched a lot of I helped with some of the judging and stuff on some of the shows, and I hosted some of the shows and stuff. So I helped a little bit with that kind of stuff. And, you know, it seemed like it was running pretty smoothly for the most part. So,
yeah, I mean, the finals for sure was, I mean, it was a really good show. I think only one person really kind of had a offset. But yeah, let me say, it was a good experience, whatever. It's kind of a good way to say goodbye to 2020. I mean, it seems like vaccines are out. Nobody's, you know, Zoom shows are done at that point. But
I don't know about that. I think Zoom's going to stick around a little bit. I think people will still do it. I mean, if they can get people to show up and buy tickets for it, it's like, why not?
Yeah, you know? I guess so. Yeah, if you look at it that way, maybe there's like a market for people who can't make it outside. I feel like the minute they say, like, it's okay to be outside, a lot of people won't be going back inside for the next 6 months, you know?
Yeah, well, that's very true. They won't be going to anything. As soon as they can get they're free to go outside, they won't be in any comedy clubs either.
Adventuring and, you know, parasailing and shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it'll be like summers in the Midwest. That's what it'll
be. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
That's because that's what we fight with out here. Like in the wintertime, comedy clubs are great, you know. Oh, you know, you can always get good shows, but then in the summertime, comedy lacks out here.
because people are cooped up all winter. They can't do anything. So then it's when it's nice, they don't want to be inside. They're outside camping and fishing and boating and doing all this outdoorsy stuff. So,
yeah. Did outdoor comedy make it out that way?
A couple shows. It outdoor comedy kind of hit, I feel like, too late in the season for for us, as far as, I mean, a couple people, I don't know, it just didn't react enough, I don't think. But then also, we had a little more laxed restrictions, because we started a lot of our clubs and stuff started.
Well,
I don't know what happened there.
I've taken over the show now. Oh, there we go.
Yeah, that was something was on my computer and I went to wipe it off, and then I somehow ended up out of the stream. So I have to do a little editing there, I guess.
That's okay. I covered pretty well. You'll see a pretty impressive Dan Bublitz impression. In that I just leaned back and fell asleep.
Nice. Anyway, what I was saying is that, so like stuff started opening up kind of in June with limited seating. So we still had indoor shows most of the year. We were really only shut down from like the end of March until June, so like only a couple months. So by the time people were like, oh, we should do outdoor comedy, we were already kind of doing stuff inside, so it wasn't like that big of a deal.
It wasn't needed, yeah. Basically.
It wasn't as needed. And then a few people did do some outdoor stuff, which was cool, but yeah, it just didn't catch on. And then by the time it did really catch on everywhere, well, now it's too cold to do outside comedy here.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you just have people like shivering. And
they wouldn't be laughing. They'd just be like, liberal, let us go back in.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, have you been out to Minnesota and Michigan like during the winter? Because I know you have like family and stuff that's out here, and I know you've come out and visited, but have you ever come out during the winter?
I went to school undergrad at Michigan State, so I've lived in the Midwest.
Oh, okay, you lived in the Midwest. Okay, yeah. So then you're aware of how it gets.
Not as bad as I guess some of the further north you go, but still, I mean, from somebody who largely grew up in California, like that's bad. I mean, that's bad enough. I don't know what worse is, but you know. Like, you know, 2 feet of snow seems like, oh, why would people ever do this? You know?
Yeah, exactly. I tell you, like when I moved back from California, that's as soon as winter came, I was like, what the fuck was I thinking?
Yeah, I see people like that live in like El Cajon and you know, like, which is, I guess, a more impoverished part of San Diego. And they whine about it. And I'm like, well, why don't you just go check out, you know, just keep going east until it's intolerable, and then you'll bounce right back. El Cajon is like an oasis compared to.
Yeah. I don't know. It's one of them things where it's like, when I look at cost of living and things like that, I'm like, oh, I'm glad I'm back here. But then anytime the winter comes, I'm just like, oh, give me the sun.
I mean, that's the bet. Like, I don't know, like, me and my dad talk about this kind of stuff a lot, which is, like, the minimum wage, right? When people are like, oh, the minimum wage, I can't live in, like, San Diego, or I can't live in L.A. on the minimum wage. It's like, yeah, you can't, but if you went to Kansas, you could buy a two-bedroom house, you know, on the minimum wage. So it's like, that's what it's for, like, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And
you're
that's
not
it.
To be able to, like, make it work in the most expensive places.
Yeah, with minimum, I mean... Yeah. Oh, absolutely. When I lived out there, I think my apartment was like $1,300 for a two-bedroom, and I don't think our mortgage is that much, and we have a decent house.
Yeah. People here, like, you know, I'm originally from upstate New York, and, yeah, when I go back home and, I don't know. I remember once my stepmom was giving me grief about, you know, he's like, oh, your friend has a house and you don't have a house. And I'm like, his house was $75,000. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
Like that's like, I couldn't even think about land in California. Like the tax alone would cost me $75,000. You know?
Oh yeah. And,
so
yeah. Like the first house I bought, was like less than $30,000, and it was like a 4-bedroom house. Yeah. But I bought a house in a small town, you know? So, yeah, and then even my second house was only like 60 some thousand. So it was like, yeah, very cheap real estate out here in the Midwest.
Yeah, this is a very basic economics lesson for anybody listening.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It's a supply-demand issue.
Like, yep. Well, and that's, you know, a lot of people, it comes up a lot. People, you know, always ask why I moved back to the Midwest to keep, and I, you know, wanting to continue with comedy. And I'm like, well, that's why. It's cheaper to live out here. It makes more sense. You know, it's more affordable to pay for a place out here. Plus I'm closer to a lot of clubs and venues that are within driving distance. So I don't have to spend money on flights and stuff.
Yeah. If you're going to be like a road comic or, you know, at least aspire to that, or at least do that some part of the year or whatever. Yeah. There's a lot more clubs, like, I guess, congregated or whatever, like in little clusters in that area.
Yep. You can drive like 8 or 9 hours and be in quite a few major cities, you know? So
yeah,
that's one thing that's definitely nice about being out here.
No, for sure. Yeah. There's always, you know, whatever. I mean, pluses and minuses about everything. Yeah. I mean, like all that said, I'm very happy that I'm well settled in San Diego and I have no intentions of going anywhere. In fact, I was like reading a story. They were like talking about like quantum technology and like, it's like another step towards like being able to like Star Trek style, like walk through a quantum thing into another space. And I was like, I really don't want to go anywhere, but it might work. Like I can imagine like for the Aurora Borealis or whatever. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of friends like, you know, out in Alaska right now. If there was like a quantum, like wormhole kind of thing, like I could do that for like 30 seconds, like just kind of pop through, just be like, okay, cool. Some green lights and then pop right back. And then be like, yeah, boom. I saw the Aurora Borealis. And I'd be very content with just that.
Yeah. That's actually something that I wish we had. I wish we could teleport. Wouldn't that be amazing? Like,
yeah, hopefully our kids are wondering. I don't know. I mean, I don't know about your kids.
I don't know. Like sometime in the future, I hope it happens. Like that's the one piece of technology that I hope gets invent like a way to teleport, because that would make traveling so much easier.
That's true, yeah. And people wouldn't hang around as long. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can just do a whole tour of Europe in an afternoon.
Yeah, exactly. Just pop into a couple different places and then like, ah, that's good.
Yeah. There's like a 5-minute time limit on watching Big Ben or whatever. You know?
Oh man. Only problem with that, then if travel would be too easy, I wouldn't have as much time for podcasts.
You can do it while you're just jumping through wormholes.
Cause that's how I handle long road trips, hours and hours of podcasts. I wouldn't have that anymore with teleporting.
That's true. Yeah.
Wouldn't have all that free time.
You still have to fill the void with something, though. I guess that's a big thing, right? Like, you know, about those like mind-numbing activities, like driving. It's like,
yeah.
What else are you going to do at that time? Yeah,
so. Yeah, exactly. That's either listen to music or listen to podcasts. And for me, it's usually podcasts. But less like sometimes I do get bored with podcasts, and then I'll listen to music. But it's it definitely helps fill the time, but not enough. I swear, it's a lot of daydreaming. That's what goes on when I drive. I don't know about you.
Daydreaming? No, mine's just relaxing. It's just like, it's nice to get away from the kids and stuff every once in a while. I'm like, please. Like, I'm sorry. I mean, it looks pretty jam-packed here for the next 30 minutes. I'm just going
to sit here for a while. Oh, I like it. That's great.
Well, especially nowadays with like weed technology. I don't know how like whatever Yeah, but like, you know what I mean? It's pretty easy to get high anywhere you want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
a little harder out here, but yeah.
I'm just talking about, you know, like vape pens and stuff like that. Yep. They're just so convenient.
Yep.
And it's kind of crazy to me, like how cops don't even really know. They're like, they're not up to speed on like weed technology from like 10 years ago. You know what I mean? Like,
I think a lot of it though is that they don't care anymore because they're getting more and more lax on weed anyway.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, I mean, the federal government just like passed a law to decriminalize marijuana or whatever. So it's like, that's like, I feel like for police, that's like the least.
They want to catch the bigger fish.
Yeah, they're looking for people that are transporting either tons of marijuana or, you know, like big drug shipments or like coke and heroin and like.
But like, I mean,
think
about how many more false arrests they could make if they just knew what vape pens were.
Well, you know that's what I mean? True. Yeah.
Like how many more communities they could harass? Like, I mean, really, like, you know, they're leaving a lot on the table.
I wouldn't give them an idea. But you know what I think it is? I think they're doing it on purpose because they're like, well, that's so much more paperwork.
And then, you probably have to go after those manufacturers and stuff. And those are, you know, those are white collars. So you don't want to go after white collars. So that doesn't work.
Yep. That's a good point.
I don't know. I'm a big fan of government and stuff in general.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the government just leaving me alone. That's what I'm a fan of. I try not to break the laws, and you know, I mind my business, you mind yours.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, all I really want out of the government is like a fast police force. Like when somebody, you know, runs a red light in front of me, I want to be able to call the police and get them busted or whatever else happens. You know, like, they never catch those bastards. You
know what I mean? Like, some bastards, it's so frustrating. Because, you know, as soon as you accidentally run a red light, you're getting pulled over.
Yeah, 100%. But that's why I started driving around with vape pens instead of like actual weed in my car. that was getting troublesome. So.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. I know we had a close call when we did a tour because we had a bunch of edibles with us, and then we got nailed at the Yuma checkpoint. I thought for sure we were done, and they let us go.
But did they keep the stuff, or they took it?
They fucking let us keep it.
Well, look at that.
I fucking blew my mind. Well, let's say they kept the vape, not the pen, but the oils for it. Because one of them had the vape pen or whatever. But all the edibles, they let us keep the edibles.
That's good.
There was quite a few. I mean, I was shocked. I mean, honestly, I was shocked when they said...
That's the benefit of an all-white comedy tour. You know what I mean? I'm assuming. No, I don't even know. But
you don't have to assume. You assumed properly. You're very accurate on that. More of our white privilege going on here.
Sorry. We just thought from the look of the car, there'd be at least one minority in here.
Yeah, exactly. But honestly, I mean, I was surprised when they said that we could go. And then when they said to take our stuff, I was like, what? My head like just exploded. And then I was like, is this a trap? Are we going to get down the road and then like the Arizona State police are going to pull us over? And it's going to be even worse than if they would have arrested us.
Call it down the road.
Like, is this a trap? What's going on here?
I would be skeptical in that situation too, but yeah. I'm sure a bunch of like, stoners there were like, you know what, we're taking the risk.
They're like, oh, they're comics. They're definitely not trying to sell this shit.
I guess that's probably the point. Yeah, they were like, it's not for sale. Yeah, it's for
they're definitely not trying to sell this stuff. This is for them.
That's fair.
Oh yeah. But
that's cool though.
Yeah, it was. It was cool that they let us go. I like said, it still shocked me because I'm not really a pop person. So I was just with them and I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna end up going to jail for something I don't even do. Something I don't even really take part in. I'm like, God damn it.
It could have, you know, it could have turned into a script or something. A very sad script, but like, you know.
Right? Well, the funny thing is, that's not the only time that ever happened to me. I had another call with other comics when we were performing at one of the military bases in Point Loma. They ended up, I don't know, apparently they could smell pot, and so they searched my buddy's car, but it was even more intense because they had us standing out in the street at like gunpoint while they searched his car. I mean they're like carrying around, you know, their assault rifles and everything. Oh, and they brought it out
to the base or whatever. Was that the violation? Is it because you brought it onto the base?
Well, they thought we did. They thought they could smell it. I don't know.
Oh, but there was nothing.
No, there was nothing. Nothing. They didn't find it. But we got searched. But I didn't know what was, you know, because I knew the other people. And I was like, did they really bring something? Like, I didn't think they would. But who knows? Yeah. Sometimes you forget. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I thought was the situation where it was going to be a situation where they forgot they had it on them. You know, they forgot to leave it at home. Something stupid like that. But then they didn't find nothing. And so then we got to come back on base and do the show or whatever. But yeah, but that was scary because we're like, I went to say something to somebody and they're like, no talking. And, you know, they're like wearing all their combat gear and guns. And I'm just like, all right.
All this for some weed, man.
Yeah, it's like, all right, I will shut up so you don't shoot me. Oh, good times. That's some of even though they were scary at the time, they're like some of the fun memories to look back at and be like, oh, remember that one time we almost got arrested going into an army base?
Yeah. Well, the close calls are the good ones. Yeah, it's the ones that like where they follow through, where it all turns up, you know, with you and Gitmo or whatever. Those are the
yeah, exactly.
Like, there was a guy, they arrested. I think it was like 15 years ago. They arrested some Yemeni, like he was from Yemen, like a Yemeni national in New York, and they threw him in Guantanamo because he had like some loose connections to Al Qaeda somehow, and then like. I don't know, like 2 weeks ago, they just let him go. Like, they just never brought up any charges. He was sitting in Guantanamo for like 16 years, and they just let him go.
Wow, like, that's insane.
Kind of like an oops. Or whatever. I mean, you know what I mean? They tried to frame it like, you know, whatever connections, they're all dead now, so it doesn't matter. But it was like, it sounds like you guys didn't fucking have anything. But anyways.
That's probably what it was, but man, that's crazy. That'd be my luck. I just get like, thrown away, they forget about me or something.
I don't know. But I mean, is that still better than, like, you know, being in Yemen? I don't know.
I can't say.
A situation in Yemen. I've never really looked into it, but, you know, there's very few, like, Middle East countries where I think it's a good situation.
Yeah, probably not so much. So. Not so much. I think there's a comic here in the cities that's from Yemen. That I can't remember if that's where he's from or not, but he's been here for a while now. But yeah, I think he's talked a little bit about it in his stand-up. About,
is it fond memories or
no?
There you go.
yeah, not so much. I don't think. Not so much.
I mean, much of what I know about culture comes from 90 Day Fiancé. That is a great show. It's like, but it's the other way, not the one where they're coming to, you know, I know plenty about the United States and, like, you know, how Americans act. But, like, yeah, they have one where the Americans go to whatever other country to marry. And that's some cultural exploration.
I'll bet.
Yeah. So
that's a show that I haven't even tried to get into.
Oh, my gosh.
Is that a show you and the wife watch?
if you miss people watching, you know, because of the pandemic, you can't really people watch. That's like people watching on crack.
Like, oh, it's okay.
Because they take the voyeurism of just peeping in on, you know, just hot messes, but they, like, you know, take out all the fluff. So you're not, like, waiting around for things to happen. They're just, like, giving you the dramatic moments of, like, I don't know, 9 months of recording. And it's, I mean, it's so tastelessly done that there's an art to it. You know what I mean? Like, yep. Like, hammer home, like, very terrible points. And yeah,
but it's, I know a lot of I know it's popular because I know a lot of people watch it. I've seen a lot of people talking about it or whatever. I don't if I watch TV, I'm usually watching, you know, a sitcom or something. I don't know. And usually for me, I don't watch like TV where I concentrate on it. It's like background noise for me because I'm always doing something else. But
I really like it because, I don't know. So, like, to me, like, the Americans are always going into these foreign countries and finding somebody hotter than themselves, right? Like, they're scaling up. Like, if they're American 3, they're going out and getting, like, a 9. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know. I felt like that was my birthright because, like, in the 80s when Indian nationals in America or, like, Indian citizens in America would, like, marry, you know, kind of like when my dad did. My dad completely went for, like, you know, like a woman 10 years younger than him and like the whole, you know what I mean? Like a gorgeous lady and really, you know, leveled up in that sense. And I never got that opportunity because by the time like it came up to my generation, they were like, oh, you need to be successful. And it was like, oh, like the documentation wasn't enough. You know, you had to,
you can't just be Indian. You also have to be successful.
Yeah, that's right. This is just a citizenship thing anyway. They're like, we can find a citizen. Like, we need.
show us the money now. Yeah.
So anyway, so I missed out on that. So like, I don't know. So when I watched that show, I kind of looked back and I'm like, oh man, I could have gone to like Nigeria or something. You know what I mean? And just.
Do you say that out loud in front of your wife?
No, she knows I'm a comedian, man. It's fine.
See, that's always a good, it's a good fallback, you know, that comedian, because, you know, I'll say stuff too, and then I'll get these dirty looks from my fiance, and I'm just like, just kidding.
My wife is so used to it. Like my wife is used to like the weird comments or whatever. It's other people in public that like look at us. And that's when she's like, you know, he's a comedian. Like that's it. We've kind of evolved past that.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Just, that's always fun too. Like having that, like that inside humor, but to where you got, you know, you're like comfortable enough with somebody and you can just be however. And then other people are like, what is going on?
Yeah. Inside jokes that way. Yeah, that's, that's a lot. Yeah, it really does make things. Yeah, when you're on the same page with somebody or you're the same wavelength.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's always funny to see other people's reactions who have no clue what's going on. Just because
it's really interesting. Like as I get older, like having a connection like that with somebody completely supersedes like I guess that sort of connection sexually. You know what I mean? It's so much more important as you age, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, just to kind of have, you know, be on the same page with somebody like mentally.
All right. Yep. No, absolutely. Especially with sense of humor, I think that's so important. You know, or for me, like as I got older, that having a sense of humor that, like, a shared sense of humor too.
Yeah, because like, I think if somebody doesn't understand your sense of humor, you're just going to be annoying to them.
Yeah,
you know what absolutely. I mean. Like, I mean,
annoying or mean.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yep.
Like I don't get a lot of people's sense of humor. Yeah, but yeah. Fortunately, my wife is fine. She has none. Okay.
Oh, well, see, there you go. Then you don't have to worry about it.
I think you have to worry about a lot after this interview.
After this comes out, we're in trouble. Mostly probably you, but that's okay.
Yeah. No, she's used to that. She's like, okay.
Let's be honest here. Let's be real. your wife's not going to listen to this.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, to be 100% honest, yeah.
Yeah, let's be honest. She's not listening to this. So.
I mean, yeah, she reaches that point of hearing me talk all the time. So she's just like, okay, I don't need more of you just pushing your ego out there.
I get enough of that at home.
Yeah.
Not but using my
and my daughter. They're well over this.
Oh, that's funny. Well, we should transition to bombing. I love to hear your story about when of time that you felt like you bombed really bad.
Okay. So a good friend of mine, I don't want to use it. Well, yeah, he's a good friend of mine, Benji Garcia Reyes. He took me out to a show one time. It's like in between San Diego and Palm Desert, like up in the hills, like Anza Borrego. It's like really like a hills have eyes sort of feel to the place. You know what I mean? Like you're just kind of driving around in like nothing. And then there's like a little town that pops up out of nowhere. And they had like an outdoor bar. And I don't know who decided to do this, but they were like, they had like a concert, right? So they like there was, you know, music playing. And then while the music took a break for an hour, they had us go up and do comedy in between, which, you know, music people and comedy people, they can be the same people, but they're usually not, you know, at the same time, same place. It's not a good mixture, generally speaking. But anyways, so we go up and we start to, you know, do comedy or whatever. And I told it's a joke about pussy. Where I say, I mean, it's basically the idea is like, you know, now that I'm married, I don't have to pretend that the vagina is delicious, right? And then there's a whole thing about pussy flavored cupcakes and, you know, that would be a disgusting cupcake and, you know, whatever, I would spit it back in somebody's face and be very angry with them, et cetera, right? So I was going off on this cupcake and then this really old guy in the crowd, like just starts screaming at, like, he's like mad. He's like, you're ruining you're ruining pussy for me. Like, he was mad. And like I don't know what it, I think he must have been like an elder of the village or something. Like, to me, he looked like just some, like, I don't know, some Warner Brothers like cartoonish sort of kook that lived in the mountains. Like in a bunker. He probably didn't even live in a house, you know, because he had like the big, like a big oversized cowboy hat and like, I'm pretty sure he was carrying like a six shooter. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, he might not have been. I don't know.
He like, probably was.
Like a very like thin, methy looking sort of cowboy who might have been between 50 and 170 years old. I don't know. There was a lot of lines in his face. But yeah, he got very mad, like to the point where I was scared. You know what I mean? Like he was threatening like violence. He's like, I'm going to shoot you up there. And then like started talking about minorities. And that was very much in his, because I think my instinct was like to, you know, if somebody talks at you, you want to talk back, but like, I just had no confidence because I was afraid for my life in these hills. You know what I mean? So like, I was just like, and so like, and then the minute you lose confidence on stage, then it's over. So then he he stormed off. But like at that point, nobody cared about anything I had to say anyways, because I had just backed down to an 85-year-old vampire cowboy. And so, you know what I mean? Yeah, and then it just all went down. And then the problem was, like, you know, usually you just take your bomb, you get in your car, and you drive back home. But Benji wanted to hang out afterwards.
Oh, no.
We hung out, like, a good 2 hours after the show was over.
Oh,
and
my God.
And then, yeah, and it was just multiple people. Like, you know, like when people are like, hey, man, at least you got up there. I don't even have the balls to get up there. Like imagine a concert full of people, like 50 separate people coming up to me virtually like in a line and just saying that one after another. So, that was probably like the worst night of the last 5 years that I've had.
Wow. Yeah. That's crazy. Like when the audience threatens you, because you really don't know, like, especially in places like that, like, you don't know what they may or may not do, you know?
I mean, yeah, I think in a situation like that, you don't know how long it will take for the police to get there. Like, you know what I mean? Even if something happened, like, you don't even know where they are. So yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's like, I don't even know if there are police here. Yeah. He probably is. I was just gonna say that
his cell phone rings. He's like, I'm the sheriff around here, and starts shooting.
Oh no. That reminds me of that movie. Is it Double Trouble? Is that the name of the movie? Nothing But Trouble. That's the name of it. Nothing But Trouble. It was a movie with Dan Aykroyd and God, who else was in it?
Like, what was the...
So this couple gets like stranded in this like small town, and then they have to like go to the court. Like, everybody's related to. And so it's like Dan Aykroyd plays multiple characters in this movie. I want to say Chevy Chase is in it too. It's like kind of a dark comedy where they like, I don't know, they get like in an
town for some reason, and they have to go through like the court system. Is that the
yeah? Idea? Yep. And they're having all kinds of trouble. I have a vague
memory of this movie. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like the judge is this real creepy old guy, and like, yeah, I'm trying to remember the exact plot. It's actually a pretty good movie, because it's one of them movies where, like I said, Dan Aykroyd plays multiple characters in it. I think John Candy's in it too. Like, it's got a bunch of them people that were, you know, from Saturday Night Live and the SCTV or whatever. Different.
Yeah, back when comedians made like funny movies as opposed to like whatever the Apatow's up to these days.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, now I'm going to have to go look, because I'm trying to remember what the plot was exactly. I just remember it had something to do with a guy and a girl were like traveling for work or something, or they had a work meeting or something. I don't remember all the details. I don't remember. It's been so long, but it was a good movie. But that's what that reminds me of.
Yeah. That guy was just terrifying for an old man. There's something very terrifying about like old leathery white people that live in home. I don't know what it is. I assume that they're like killing machines. You know what I mean?
Well, I gotta try to not get leathery and stay out of a town like that then. I don't want to be scaring people. Take a lot for me to become leathery.
That stuff requires like years of outdoor work, and you know what I mean? Like,
and we both know I'm not going outside.
Neither of us are going leathery in our whole age.
Yeah, I'm like, the sun. Yeah, I'm like, I see the sun and I try to duck behind a tree. not a fan of the sun, that's for sure. That's for sure. Yeah. But yeah,
you have SPF base layer.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's another. I was telling you earlier about how I've noticed with the lights and stuff how white I am or whatever, and I've been working on material. I have a joke about sunblock too, because this is like a real story that this really happened. Over the summer, I was out doing yard work, and I only get two colors. I'm pasty or crispy. Like, I don't suntan. I burn. So sunblock is my friend. And anyway, I was doing yard work and I went to put sunblock on, and I had to like really look again to see if I actually put it on, because I'm so white, it just blended in like with my skin. Like, I couldn't tell if I put it on or not. And so the joke I've been working on is if I wore makeup, my skin tone toner would just be sunblock. And sad, it's true.
No, I mean, it was the end of the year, you know, so we had to do our HSA spending. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that is. Like, you had the health savings account.
Yep.
So my wife just bought like a bunch of like SPF makeup. So they have that. They literally have that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So you can put a layer of makeup and it's like SPF 15, or, I mean, there's different levels of it and stuff. So.
Yeah. Huh, I did not know that. Well, yeah, now, if I want to now I can do wear makeup and sunblock at the same time.
Yeah, that's true. It's 2020, you know.
Oh, that's funny. I've been in some situations like that. it's funny because the show that you went to was with Benji, because I've been in some sticky situations that Benji had put on, shows that he had put on, like down at the Salty Frog. That was his place for the longest time, and there was some sketchy situations there where I felt like, okay, I'm gonna get hurt.
Oh yeah, the Salty Frog. I mean, I just want to, you know, Benji put me in a lot of great situations too. I just wanted to qualify all that. Yeah, I just wanted to say that too. But I remember, well, yeah, one time at the Salty Frog, and this was actually when Alan was running it, I think. Alan Henderson, another good guy down here in San Diego. And I was like at the Salty Frog, I was just at an open mic, and I was like talking to somebody outside. We were just smoking, and you know, the guy was like these two Vato looking fellas like walked by us, and the guy was like, "Hey man, you want to hear a joke?" Right? And they turned around and gave us that look, like, "What you think you funny fool?" Like that. And I was like, "Oh, I don't know, man. I'm just a comedian." And they started like stepping at me, or like they started walking back. And I just like took off. I was like, "Nope." I said, "Nope." And then I walked back in, you know what I mean? Dropped whatever I was smoking. I walked back into the bar. But that other guy stayed out there, right? And then, so I go back to the bar and I'm talking to a couple of comics that I was hanging out with and just kind of drinking at the bar. I didn't say anything about what had happened outside. And then like 5 minutes later, that one guy came in, and he's all bloodied up and like barely walking. And then like he brings like two of his friends and they go back outside.
Wow.
and I was paralyzed that whole time. just with like fear. That was actually the last time I went to the Salty Frog. I was like, maybe like, he's not for me.
You know what I mean? I better stay away from here. Oh man, it's crazy how intense comedy can get.
I guess so. Yeah.
Who knew it could be so rough? It's gotta be. Excuse me. Gotta be a rough and tumbler.
I think I almost got my ass kicked there another time. It was just during a set, because like this girl was like yelling, like she was trying to get me to like sing Happy Birthday to somebody, and I kept like, so I would pretend to start and then be like, "Nah," and then I'd get them riled up again and be like, "Okay, let's start," and then be like, "Nah," and I did that three times. and then at the end I was like, "Nah, I'm not gonna do this shit, you dumb bitch, get the fuck out of here." And that did not go over well, because she was apparently some sort of gangster, and like then her guy was like trying, like my wife was telling me about it later, like that she like came within feet of me, like she tried rushing the stage and like came within feet of me before they were able to grab her and yank her out. And I didn't know, like I had turned my back, you know, I just said it and turned my back to the situation. You know, because people were laughing. It wasn't like I was just abusing somebody. It was, you know, it was for a comedic purpose. Yeah.
That usually happens, especially there. It happened. Like I had a guy, this is the same night I met Rich, the first time I met Richie Estrada, because he had the same kind of situation. This guy, this one of the regulars was just being obnoxious. And at one point, you know, he came up at multiple times. He came up and approached comics while they were on stage and were like threatened them. And he came up to me, like he kept heckling people, and then he like heckled me, and I said something. I basically made a joke about how he looked like one of the captains from The Deadliest Catch. And then I made fun of open mic. I was making fun of open mics and not really making fun of them, just in the set. I was like, welcome to open mic night where dreams come to die, or something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
He took offense to it because he thought I was making fun of the bar, and you know, that bar is a military bar, and the guy that owned it previously, I think he died in combat or something, and whatever. And so he got all offended and thought I was talking about the bar, and he got up in my face, and I'm like, I'm not making fun of the bar. This is a great place or whatever. And he just got up, kept getting up in my face. And finally I was like, "I'm making fun of the open mic." And he goes, "You're making fun of Mike?" He's like, "I'm Mike." And I'm like, "What? I thought your name was Tom." Cause he was wearing a mechanic shirt with a name tag that said Tom on it. So now I'm really confused. And like, while he's up there in my face, like we're going back and forth, and I'm doing my set. Like, I'm still trying to perform, and I'm basically doing crowd work with just him. You know, the crowds, you know, they're kind of laughing. But at the same time, I'm like, man, he's going to probably stab me. I'm like, I mean, yeah, this is not good.
Barroom comedy has that vibe, man. I've had people come and try to hug me on stage. Just like gross drunks. You know what I mean? Like, when they're just like, they're really happy you're there or something, and they're like, oh, come on over. And I'm like,
no, thank you. Hard pass.
I'm like, yeah, gross old ladies. That happens more than.
Yeah.
You know, because especially if you do bar shows in small towns, like, yeah, gross old ladies are very.
Yep, it's a common thing. So the bumming and bombing, the dreadful feeling you get when you do bomb, how long does that typically last for you, and how has it changed as you've progressed in comedy?
I mean, I don't know, man. Like, I'll give a roundabout answer, right? Like, I think I'm a competitive person, right? So I always kind of look for – I'm never looking for what I did well. You know, I want to know what it is that I can improve upon. So, like, a bomb sits with me forever. Like, you know what I mean? I never forget a bomb, because, like, those are my learning opportunities. Those are the ones where those are the sets that I want to listen to see what went wrong.
Yep.
Like, the goal is for that to never happen again. You know what I mean? Like, that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think it should. A bomb should really hurt. And, yeah, you have to get over it as a comic. But, you know what I mean? Like, if you don't... If it doesn't motivate you to get better, then you're going to keep bombing. And I would advise not to get comfortable bombing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But yeah, you got to use, like, so for me, that's what I use it as. Anytime something doesn't work, I use that as motivation. Or, like, you know, coming second in a comedy festival, I use that as motivation. You know what I mean? Because I think comedy is one of those things where you can keep getting better every single day, every single time you go out there and perform. So yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Yeah, that's how I look at it.
That's a good lead into another question that I like to talk about is how do you analyze that then? So when you do bomb, what do you look at? What are you looking for so that you can improve next time?
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, everybody has their process, right? Mine is I don't really write anything down. I record everything. So whether it's an open mic, whether it's a show, whatever it is, I record everything and I try to listen to it all. I'm not always the best about doing that, but usually on the drive home or something, I'll just listen to the thing, especially now with Bluetooth and stuff. It's easy enough. But when I'm listening over on a bomb, I'll listen to many times over. And it's really to kind of pinpoint where things went wrong. Where did my energies change? Because usually it's the words. The words are going to be the same, right? Because you're telling the same jokes. But, like, I'm usually trying to listen to, like, where it was that I lost confidence in delivering that joke. And, like, let's say, you know, I lost them at some point in the middle of the set. You know, what I'm looking to see, okay, what could I have done to get them back the next time? So if I'm in this hole, like, was it, oh, did I just stay on this subject too long? Right? So basically, if I'm on this topic, if I'm talking about relationships and they're not feeling my material on relationships, or, you know what I mean? Like, some, you know, then what do I, you know, what can I switch to? And so, does that make sense? I just kind of run through strategies. I'm like, okay, if this is happening again next time, right? So if I'm doing my pussy flavored cupcakes joke again next time, and there's an old kooky man like screaming at me from the corner, what is it that I'm going to go into? And one of the things, I mean, like, so from that bomb in particular, I learned, well, don't puss out. Don't, like, worry about, oh, this guy's gonna, like, harm you physically, or let that get into your head. Because, you know, had I stood up to him while I was on, I had the mic, I had the stage.
Yep.
You know
what I
mean? So had I just stood up to him and been like, you know, said something about him being, you know, all the things that I said now about him being a mountain man or living in a bunker or any of those things, and had I said into him at that moment, at that time, it would have shut him the fuck up. And probably turned that crowd and got him on my side instead of me looking like, and, you know, just basically, because I'm supposed to be a comic. I'm supposed to be able to handle this kind of stuff. Yep. Right. So if I'm up there looking like a pussy, for, you know, lack of a better word, like, they're not going to respect me. So, you know what I mean? So, like, that's what I look for, you know what I mean? And so, yeah. So, like, now, I mean, I'll say this, like, I, now that when I do get a heckler, I love it because like now I feel ready. I feel more ready because of that experience, because of other experiences too. But you know what I mean? Like, yeah. So I think that's the big thing to analyze. Like, okay, where did I go wrong? What joke did I mean, I've thrown jokes away because of bombing on them too much, or realizing, oh, if I tell this joke, this will fuck up my whole set. Right. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or, you know, I like the joke, but it doesn't really fit in anywhere. You know, so things like that. So like, I think that analysis is critical in terms of getting better as a comic. You have to be able to kind of reflect and see what's working and what's not. And unless you're listening to when it doesn't, you know, if you're just listening to it when it works, that feels good. But if you're listening to it when it doesn't work, then you're going to, then you actually have things to figure out or oh, learn.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. I think, because I feel like too, like if you're just looking at what you do right and trying to replicate that, I feel like you get stale and stagnant as a performer too.
You get timid. Mm-hmm. You're afraid to try something that's out of the wheelhouse or something that knows it's going to work. And I think that's how people end up telling the same or kind of having the same act for 10 years. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? There's people that I know that respect. You know what I mean? I respect and love their act. But in the 6 years that I've been doing comedy, I haven't seen their act change. Yeah. And so it's something I also notice. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I'll say this. I mean, regardless of anybody else does, it has nothing to do with me. I don't want to be that. I want my material to evolve. And, you know, I don't think you get there unless you're pushing yourself.
Yeah. You know what I mean? You definitely have to try new things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think you have to, you know, you have to be on stage. You have to be willing to take that risk. You can't be afraid of the bomb. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, you have to like know, okay, when I do bomb, if I bomb at minute four of a set, I can't let the next 4 minutes bomb as well. You know what I mean? I have to dig myself out of that hole,
or at least try.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Just go out fighting.
Give that valiant effort.
And it's gonna happen. You also have to know it's gonna happen. There's going to be factors that are way out of your control sometimes, but you know, I think, yeah, I mean, once again, you take it personal, you do the best you can. And the goal is to make it so that you never bomb, but even Dave Chappelle bombs, you know what I mean? Like, so it's, I don't know, I guess it's a very like side of mouth sort of lesson there, but yeah, you're going to bomb. You shouldn't bomb. That's what I would say.
Yeah. And that's absolutely true. Absolutely true. When a joke isn't working or you feel like you're starting to bomb, what goes through your head at that moment?
I mean, yeah, like I said, now I'm usually looking for an out. So like, how do I change this into the next topic? And usually, I mean, this one works really well for me. Oh, I guess y'all didn't like that. You know what I mean? And if it's true, they'll acknowledge it. You'll get the quick laugh out of it. But then once you do that, don't go back into that or similar material. Like literally switch it up. Like, oh, you guys don't like talking about babies. Well, how about we talk about going to the grocery store? You know what I mean? Like just try something completely different. And then, you know, the other thing I'll try to do is then try to incorporate more crowd work. Because sometimes you're like, okay, look, they're just not feeling my vibe. But if I throw in some crowd work, well, maybe they'll just like my personality. You know what I mean? Give yourself a shot. Like just, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Gotta almost like grasping for straws, figure out what's going to work and what isn't with the crowd. All right. Well, now that we talked about bombing and all that dark stuff, we're going to switch it around. I like to end on positive stuff. So I've got a new thing I've been doing. I created a playlist of Get Pumped for Comedy. Do you have a song that gets you pumped and ready to perform?
It's a stupid one, but like, there's a Disney. It's on Descendants 2, like the Disney movie. I watch it with my daughter a lot. So there's a song called "Chilling Like a Villain."
Okay.
And yeah, that's this. I usually don't like. It's not like a go up on stage type of thing.
No.
But I'll put that music in my ears, and it just it makes me think about my daughter for a second before I get on stage. It just puts me in the right mindset. It's a cool song. It's I'm not like some like Disney dork. I mean, you know.
I love how you're like trying to defend yourself.
Drake will remake this song one day. And it'll
slow down. It's one Disney song. Do not judge me. I have kids. it makes me think about my kid.
If you're thinking like this orchestral sort of like Disney song with like, you know, whatever, that's not what it is. This is a very pop driven, you know. I feel like I should play it. I feel like I should play the song.
we'll get copyrighted or some shit.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's Disney. They don't mess around.
No, they don't. They don't. You get like one lyric and they'll be like, you gotta end this whole podcast. And then they'll go start my podcast.
Yeah, everything on this podcast is ours now.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Exactly. Well, so far in your career, what's been your favorite gig that you've done?
Oh, man, I don't know. I mean, this is going to be a cheesy thing to say, but I just like doing comedy so much. They're all great. I don't, you know, whether there's 200 people there, whether there's 15 people in the room, you know, if it's a gig with 10 or less people in the room, fuck you for booking me on that shit. Like, get your shit together.
Maybe you need to become a draw.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, get your shit together for these things, make better comics there. Like, whatever it takes. You need to have better rooms. If I'm the problem, then that's I still put that on the producer.
If I'm the problem, that's still your problem.
I remember there was a producer once who, like, he kind of said, oh, you could build your own room. Like, you can, you know, get 50 people in here. I was like, dude, if I can get 50 people, I can perform at any goddamn club in this city. You know what I mean? Like, exactly. I don't need your fucking room. I mean, whatever. I mean, just saying.
No, it's funny, too, that you bring that up, because that's another thing that's funny to me, how, like, you know, you do have these people that do bringers or whatever, and they're like, yeah, if you bring 50 people, it's like, if I could bring 50 people on my own, I don't even need you.
Yeah, exactly.
I do my own show. Why would I bring my 50 people to you? I just go do a show and take all that money. You know, it's like...
But anyway, so my point is, like, I mean, I like every single time I go up to comedy, every single new experience, that's my favorite one. That's my favorite thing to do.
That's a great answer.
Yeah. Because to me, it's a personal journey. I want to get better every single time, just as long as you bring 10 people.
As long as there's 10 or more people, I'm happy camper.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
I like it. All right. Well, the last thing I like to do is called pick a number. You're going to pick a number between 1 and 20. I'm going to ask you a corresponding question that may or may not be related to comedy.
Okay. 16.
16. On average, how many times a week do you hurt yourself trying to dance in the shower?
Oh, none. I mean, none. my shower time is very, very, you know, specifically allocated for masturbation. There's no time for dancing in my shower time. I'm a married guy. There's not a lot of privacy in my life. So, I mean, that's just, you know.
Things to do. Oh, this has been great. Where can people find you online?
At Nielsen Comedy on Instagram, I guess Facebook, the same thing, like, and anywhere, like Twitter. I mean, you can look at me on Twitter. I don't really write anything on Twitter. I'm not a Twitter person, but Instagram. I would follow me on Instagram. Check me out there.
Perfect. All right. Well, thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah. Thank you, man. Thanks, Dan, for having me. And yeah, good to see you again, man.
This has been brought to you by Dead and Mellow. Follow us on all your social media platforms and shop around at deadandmellow.com to see all of our stand-up, music, and podcast releases. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, see you later.
See you. Are we actually leaving or just...
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production, hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.